Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Do not wake up your wife with the Nando intro.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to your absolutely favorite 52 minutes of your week. It's Under the Radar, part of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast Network. Joining me, as always, your friend and mine, Derek Van Riper.
Good morning.
Good morning, my friend. Unfortunately, we are still Nando DeFino-less. That will change soon. He will be back. He just has a couple more weeks. I think it's just a couple more weeks where he'll be gone, and then we'll get the whole team back together. So you're stuck with a third best version of the intro, because it is quite early on the West Coast. And my partner said,
"Do not wake up your wife with the Nando intro." I thought it was true a few weeks ago, and I have confirmed that it is true in the time since.
It is a wise choice. It is most definitely a wise choice. So it's not as good. It will not make you question whether Nando is back the way it did a few weeks ago with DVR. But we're back. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. I'll hand it over to DVR. He's going to tell you what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, lots of good stuff on the show today. Ian had some updated dynasty rankings that went up on The Athletic on Friday. So there are probably a million things we could dig into just from that list, and not even just the dynasty implications of the list, but shorter term implications of moving players around on that list as well. And then we've got a group of topics that I've labeled Nando's Funhouse. These are things that Nando would definitely bring up if he were here, that we will try and bring up at the end of the show.
Yes, absolutely. Well, really excited to get going. Finally did get the Dynasty rankings out. Special thanks to Brandon Funston for like just getting them in Thursday night and like doing the editing and everything that he did. It was such a pain in the butt, but I wanted to make sure that if people had trade deadlines of August 15th, that they would have some indication of a top 400. Not perfect. Obviously, it's never perfect. Like, you know, I put Tatis at 10 before the PED test. And I was just like, you know what? I just don't trust this guy. I've gotten to the point where I'm not interested. Dropping to 10, and then literally list goes live 2 hours later. Tatis hits, and you know that we'll get to that one. But yeah, it was tough. Thanks to Robert Mershak for really helping me get it done and get it out. So there it is.
Yeah, it's a huge endeavor all the time, and I think it's the kind of project that no matter what type of rankings you do, you look at the list at the end and you kind of feel like you could keep doing more no matter what, no matter how much time goes in. It's like a thing you can never be fully satisfied with. If you're clicking in the background, my dog has found a puzzle. She has a puzzle toy.
Hazel?
Yeah, normally she naps on the bed, but she found where I hid the puzzle, and the puzzle's usually full of treats. And she's making herself part of the show, which is nice. But yeah, usually you can spend just hours on hours on hours on these rankings. And yeah, Julio Rodriguez at number one. I don't think anybody is going to fight you on that. I don't think the point of any of the conversation we're going to have today is to fight with placement of players. It's more just observations of, hey, look, this is a guy that was not a top 100 player in redraft coming into the season. And while his dynasty stock was much higher going into this year, this is a really big leap, because if you are at 1-1 on a dynasty list, you're probably a first rounder pretty clearly for the purposes of a redraft going forward as well. So I think that's really exciting to see him there and to see Bobby Witt Jr. at 4, because I think I was the Bobby Witt Jr. skeptic, at least within the shows we do here at The Athletic. I just thought the price in redraft was too high. I didn't think there was a ton of long-term concern, but he is better than I expected, faster than I expected. That's the main thing. It's happened a lot quicker than I thought it would. So, you know, with those two guys being in that position, I guess I wonder, what does that mean for you as you think about their value just in 2023 leagues as well?
Ooh, that's a good question, because Julio Rodriguez in my main event league that I do with Rob, those two got taken at the turn of the second round. So it was the pick 30 and 31. It was the guy who took, I believe, Trey Turner first, and then he took these other two. And it was sort of like we were both celebrating, because it actually put us in position to move everybody else. We didn't have either of those two even remotely close to that. So, and when Aaron Judge fell to us at the end of the third and Cedric Mullins to the top of the fourth, it's because of that play. Where do they go next year? Julio Rodriguez. Where does Julio Rodriguez go? I can look at this list and I can see it. I was talking to James Anderson, the other day, and we were talking about, he's doing Rob DiPietro is putting together a 2023 early draft that James is going to take and do. And I was talking to him, hey, maybe we'll do it together. And the timing is just crazy for me right now. And so James is doing it himself, and there's really few better. But he said he's just going to go to his dynasty list and ask that question. So who's going first round? Acuna, Soto. Do you take Acuna and Soto ahead of Julio Rodriguez next year is really a solid question, I guess. I mean, I don't think he's – this is a dynasty rank, right? It's a dynasty rank, so it's the extra 3 years. Gosh, I don't know. DVR, where do you think they land in next year's redraft?
Yeah, working backwards on this is really tough, because you are looking at the longer view, and I think a lot of first rounders right now, or at least potential first rounders, are very young. Like, this is going to be probably one of the younger first rounds that we've had in a long time. I would imagine Acuna probably before the end of the season needs to show us a stretch, even for a month of the previous power. It's not that we wouldn't still expect it to come back in 2023 if we don't see it, but I just think for people to justify, especially an early first round pick on him, you know, a top three, top five spot, I think we need to see some of that happen in the second half of August and September, or even in the postseason, right? I think that would count too. If Acuna's mashing home runs in the postseason, that might be enough for most people to say, yeah, he's back in. He's back in the first part of round one. I guess the other part of the question, it seems to me that if you have Rodriguez at one, you believe the floor is also very high. It's not just ceiling, right? Coming into the season, it was the sky's the limit. And now it's, wow, the floor is even higher than we thought, because this was his first exposure to big league pitching. And he's doing this with just 46 games played at AA last year. And that gets the wheels turning for me, because, you know, we just saw Michael Harris get a deal from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. They just extended him already, and he got to the big leagues really quickly, and it's more than so held smart. His own, right? Like, you're seeing,
oh my God,
you're just seeing some pretty unusual things in terms of young players cruising through the minor leagues and having success right away. And I imagine we're both looking at Rodriguez right now and saying 27.2% K rate. That's amazing for a player who's 21 in the big leagues for the first time. That's probably coming down next year. Doesn't even have to for him to be good, because the power speed combo works. The quality of contact he makes keeps the batting average floor right around where it is. Rest of season projections agree with the batting average he's got so far.
Wow. Yeah.
He's a 270 hitter this season. The worst rest of season projected batting average for Julio is 265. So I would imagine that most projection systems are going to put growth on top of what he's already done, given the age to level context of what's happening here. And I think you're going to be looking at a player that probably sees something around a 30-30 projection for most of projection systems.
That's what he's looking at. I mean, he's looking right now as a 30-30 player in his rookie season. I mean, it is. And again, this is not an OBP rank. This is a average rank. So that does change the dynamic quite a bit, right? Because if it was OBP, I would go Soto, I think, number one. even with the speed, but it really has so much to do with speed for me. Julio Rodriguez is going to help win leagues. I'm a speed guy, right? I talk about Mateo all the time. It's because if you can get those stolen bases, you're going to be fighting. Stolen bases win leagues. When leagues are tight, it's as, you know, in only leagues or even in full roto leagues, it could come down to 2-3 stolen bases. I was not expecting Julio Rodriguez to steal 21 bases in 100 games. Were you?
No, I wasn't either. And I think it's something that on the Athletic Baseball Show, Keith Law brought this up at the beginning of the season. He said, I've seen Julio before. I didn't think he ran like that. I didn't think that was part of the package for him. And I do think the Acuña comps are fair when you look at what these guys both do. And the other thing you can do is you can look back at the full season projections. Those are still up over at Fangraphs for all the different projection systems. You can count the number of players who were projected for 30-30 on one hand, because there were no 30-30 players projected. Trey Turner was a 28 homer, 32 steal player by the full season projections, 307 average. I mean, I think Turner is still, for me, a possible 1-1. We don't know where he's going to play because it's a free agent.
Certainly 1-1 possibility for redraft. No
but
question.
In Dynasty, he's really tough because how does speed typically age? Not well. There are exceptions. Turner's not old yet, though, either.
But when you slide like that.
When
you slide like that, it's just so pretty. But Turner, you know, there was a minute in June or late May where Turner wasn't that good. Where you were seeing on the overall, I would look and I would see that nobody who had the first pick was in the top. And then all of a sudden he turned it on. And where is he at now? Let me take a...
Oh, man, he's got to be top five among hitters in terms of dollars earned, because he's at 306, 18 homers, 20 steals, yeah, 83 RBIs, and 71 runs scored. I think there's such an edge. If he stays with the Dodgers... Or he ends up in another place that's a top three, top four sort of lineup. Those counting stats can be so good. And he's doing that with a 344 OBP. That's his lowest OBP since 2018. So he's probably underperforming just a little bit with that number. And that's costing him a little on the run scored count so far. I mean, I still think there's a really strong case for him as your 1-1 pick. And I would wonder if the people that picked 1-1, if they weren't winning their leagues because of the players that were there at the 2-3 turns and the 4-5 turns, because this doesn't look like a collapse situation. Player missed too much time with injury. Player fell flat on his face and was 60% of what you expect him to be. This is more like something else went wrong with those builds.
Yeah. Well, but again, he wasn't, if you look, like if you could break it down, he was a top 30 player at the beginning of the year. top 30 to 50 player. He was struggling a little bit. He was not doing, I think over the last 6 weeks is when it's really kind of exploded for him. And he's shown what he's capable of doing. I mean, he's a dominant piece. He's 29. Julio Rodriguez is 21. That means we're looking at, 12 years of play, 12 years of speed. You never know. I mean, there's an ACL, there's a this, there's a that. But, it's just, he's really unbelievable and plays the game with such spark. I was just a little bit like, you know what? This is how I kind of put together this list. Would I trade this guy for this guy? Would I trade this guy for this guy? Now, you take Aaron Judge or the Yordan Alvarez, like that's one spot apart, right? Would I trade Judge to get Alvarez? Probably not, because of my Yankee bias. But otherwise, like, who would you not trade to get Julio Rodriguez in a dynasty league at any point of your development, either in a rebuild or if you're even going for it? Who would you not, who's there that you would say, nah, I'd rather have this guy?
I'm not sure in that format, the keep forever situation where you're not right, thinking about cost. I don't know if there is a player that I'd put ahead of him now. I mean, if you played in a league where everything Ohtani did counted, then okay, you play league where things are different, but
right,
it's not.
Then I do it. Then you do Ohtani for sure. Or if it's a daily league, you would do Ohtani, but this isn't. This is an NFBC style 15 team, two catchers. This is what it looks like. And for me, Julio Rodriguez and maybe Bobby Witt Jr. got a little bit of the Julio Rodriguez momentum to put him in that spot. But where is Witt at? The numbers are Witt's numbers are equally not as impressive on the batting average side. But and certainly he's not going to have, well, I mean, it's just not that bad, bro. It's 15 home runs and 23 stolen bases. It's and he's 22. You're looking at, and he's just going to grow from here. He's just going to get comfortable. I mean, that's the crazy thing. We warn against these rookies. The what's happening to Riley Green right now is, but he's struggling. You know, he's not taking the league by storm. But when you come up as a 21, 22 year old and you're the best player on the field, what's going to happen when you're 27? 28 and you get him 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33. Now he's 34. You start to get nervous. But until then, I just don't know. Now there's a situation where I could see moving Bobby Witt. That's more league dependent, right? So if I'm in a rebuild and I've got Trey Turner and a team that is in first place has Bobby Witt Jr., I'll trade Trey Turner for Bobby Witt Jr. But if I were competing and I had Turner, I don't think I would move Witt. So there's a little bit of context that's needed there. Unlike for the Julio Rodriguez. Though if I were competing, I don't know that I would trade Bobby Witt Jr. for Trey Turner, because there's 6-7 years. I don't think the value difference here is enough to give up 6 or 7 years of Bobby Witt Jr. What do you think?
It's about a $10, maybe $15 difference in terms of what they've done so far this season. But I think it's important to remember that Bobby Witt Jr. had a pretty bad first month, and then he's been this guy from about May on. So those overall numbers would look a little better if that first month hadn't happened when he's making those adjustments. That all being said, I think I would make that trade. I think I would rather, if I were in first or like right in contention right now and I needed the upgrade, I think I would take the Turner side of that. And I'm sure to balance that out, there could be some other old players coming back that might be upgrades. Maybe you're sending back another, you know, young flyer type player that's just a dart for the future. There could be ways to balance that out. I don't think in principle that that's an unfair deal. I think the handful of years that Turner still has where he's playing at or near this peak could be worth it. Yeah, it could be four more years. Because thinking about the way speed ages, I brought this up a little earlier, how many old players that run have you been trusting in recent years? Think about the old players that run that you actually want on your team. Starling Marte comes to mind for me. I've had a lot of Starling Marte in recent years, but
I don't trust him.
Is that the whole list? Like, I mean, is there anybody else?
Even Starling Marte is getting caught more this season than ever before. He went from never getting caught pretty much last year when he was on the Oakland A's, and every day he'd have like three. It was ridiculous. To this year, I mean, he's got, what is he, 16, 17 stolen bases? But if you look at the caught stealing, he's got to have 8 or 9. So the percentage is going down, and he's 33 years old. I've got in a dynasty league right now, someone's trying to send me Starling Marte for a Tim Anderson type deal. But I don't trust it, you know, and I think that Anderson has a couple more years left in the tank. But it's these early 20s to late, you know, late 20s, the beginning of your 30s, that's when it starts to go, 32, 33. Like, look what's going on with Whit Merrifield right now. I was praying to get him off one of my dynasty teams, but I just could never find the way to do it, because I knew that this, it was going to dive. Now, he may come back next year, but I was avoiding Whit Merrifield this year. You know, as he turned 32 going into 33, it's like that's not going to last. And now he's not even playing all the time, right? Or not as much as he was certainly playing for the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, he's finally done, it appears. I mean, maybe not forever, but he's so broken right now. I take responsibility. I finally ended up with him on a team back during draft season, usually avoided him. I trusted him. It's on me. You can blame me.
Yeah, it's really, really not on you. I paid for him in AL labor. Because I wanted speed. But speed, look, I mean, if you look at my AL labor team, I'm in first place in stolen bases with 100. Eno is second with 83. There's that much of a difference. That's why I traded Mateo for Luis Arraez, essentially. Then in NL tout, I'm in, I think, second place on steals. I'm in first place in saves in AL labor, and second place to Michael Simeon. Second place in saves in NL tout. And both of those teams are very successful. The reason I think you've got to get your saves and you've got to get your steals. So I really do always make sure of that, because you don't want to, you cannot get steals once the season is going. It just becomes so much more expensive.
Yeah, I was able to trade for Whit Merrifield in a couple leagues, but you're right. It's hard to trade for good players that run in season. Yeah. People don't trade them.
I mean, I traded for Michael Harris about 6 weeks ago. I may have mentioned that on the show with Tristan Cockcroft, and gave up Daniel Bard at the top of his game, who's held the job. Cade Cavalli, which might end up coming back to haunt me terribly. And some fab money. And the reason Tristan did it was because he had a really big lead in stolen bases. That was the only speed I could find. The only speed that was findable. And even now I'm starting to look for pitching, because this league, man, and I'll tout, I've been in first place now for about, I think, 5 weeks, 5-6 weeks, and had some pretty big leads. But I don't think I'm going to be able to hold it, because the pitching staff is just giving up too many hits and too many runs. So I'm at the top in like OBP, runs, stolen bases, everything. And then ERA is like, I'm in, you know, 10th place of 12. And WHIP, I'm in like 8th place of 12. And that's the difference right there. So the Wilderman prior team is, I think, just caught me last night and we're tied 93.5 points. But I just don't think it's going to hold. Unless everybody pitches great, but then Taiwan Walker went down last night. But these blowups, they just kill you. This game is very very humbling. It's very rare that you get to coast to a victory in fantasy baseball. It just doesn't happen. It's always a real challenge.
Yeah, I can't remember a league where I knew this early. I didn't say, I'm going to win. Like I've probably felt good about chances, but I've never had certainty about it in the middle of August.
I've had certainty, and that's a lot. It's actually, in some ways, it's not as much fun. But last year in labor, I had certainty. Like, I knew that I had it. It was just a question of what the number was going to be. Eno this year, I think, in AL labor has certainty. I'm chasing him. I'm up to 87, but he's going to win. He's going to win. I'm just going to try to, like I said last week, chop into his score. That's it. That's all you can do.
You mentioned this as you were getting started. The publication of the list happened a few hours before we found out about the Tatis suspension.
Mm.
And having that information now, I mean, how much does that change the multi-year outlook? Obviously, it has redraft implications because of missed time that'll carry over into next season. But my attitude with PEDs has been more like, well, it's a bummer when players do it, right? Because you want players to just do this on their own. But the number of players who cheat is probably much greater than the number of players who get caught. That's law of gravity in my mind. I think people have this misconception about steroids that, oh, you got caught, you can't take them anymore, and you're not going to be good anymore. It's like, no, you took them, you got bigger and stronger, you're still going to have the benefits of that. And then for Tatis, to me, the bigger concerns long-term are just the shoulder and the wrist. Like, physically, if he heals back from those things, he's going to be the player he was before all this happened.
You know, I dropped him to 10. I was sitting there all proud of myself. I was like, I don't care. I'm going to make him number 10. And then the reason was, and I don't like saying this because it's not very nice, but it's the knucklehead quotient for me. It's there's always something going on with a guy, with Tatis. There's always something that holds him back. It's a, you know, same with Chris Sale, right? Chris Sale just broke his wrist or fractured his wrist on a dirt bike accident while he's recovering from a broken hand. At this point with Sale, it's like there's always something that's going to mess him up, whether it's scissors to a uniform, you know, breaking up a hallway. So when I'm looking at dynasty players and guys that I want to invest in, I talk about this a lot. It's character for me matters a lot, because how you are, if you can be steady in your mind, you can be a great baseball player. If you can't be steady, you're going to be inconsistent. To me, I put Tatis at 10. Obviously, it's not the talent. He's got more talent probably than almost anybody. You know, maybe Julio Rodriguez. I remember Manny Machado yelling at him, "You're the best player in the game. It doesn't matter. Get out there. We need you," right? This next move, I don't know. I mean, if I offer you Rafael Devers for Tatis, you're taking it, aren't you?
If I'm playing right now for the immediate future, probably.
Vacuum it. What if you're not playing the immediate future?
Hmm. I think I'm taking my chances on Tatis in that situation. Oh, yeah.
How about Kyle Tucker? You love Kyle Tucker.
I do. I think I'd go Tatis over Tucker.
Wow. Okay. So it's not, so you look at this 10 ranking even before the PD suspension and you question it a little bit. I don't trust him to, he's in the Buxton area for me now. He's in the Trout area for me now. I don't trust you. And if I don't trust you, I don't want you. I there are other guys that I would choose over you. You know, but if he fell, like if we were doing a startup dynasty draft right now, I would not. No, I would drop Tatis. I would take Guerrero over Tatis. He shows up to work every day. I think I would take Ramirez. I would take Devers. Gosh, do I take Betts over him? Don't know. He might just be off my board. So because he's off my board, I don't know that he drops that much lower. Tough. It's tough because the speed is so tantalizing, but no, I'm not for me. Not for me. For me, and that's the thing about the list. I mean, there are people who are like, what kind of a list is this? This doesn't make any sense. It's like, yeah, it does make sense to me. Makes sense in my head. Like, that's all I can make the list for.
It's
I'm
my,
not making
my
the
list. Of course it makes sense to me.
Like, makes sense. Like, there may be mistakes every once in a while where I go, I really think that through. Like, there's one on the list where I'm like, that's wrong. That's just an old, I did not move him and I should have. I didn't see it. That person is Carlos Correa, just to be fair. But other than that, like, you know, no. Sorry, I don't like it. But I'll be happy to look at your list. That's part of why I don't like doing the list so much, because people are like, you know, trash, it's trash. Like, I don't need to hear you say it's trash. I've lived a long time. I'm not interested in that opinion. But anyway, that's my Fernando Tatis. So you kind of like him where it is. I would drop him a few. I would certainly drop him a few from my eyes.
I think the multi-year aspect of all of this, as much as an 80-game suspension is devastating from a redraft perspective, it's just like a soft breeze in a dynasty situation.
Doesn't it suggest that this is just, you're going to get more of the same? Like, what's going to change? It's entitlement on Tatis's part. That's my issue. I'm not a fan of entitlement, right? I was a professional actor on sets, so I see what entitlement looks like. Professional actors who are big stars can be very entitled. It doesn't work. Your team doesn't, the show will not be as good. When you have somebody who's a great leader on your team, it's way, way better. Changes everything. Tatis is just never to be... I just can't trust him. I mean, where are you taking Tatis next year then? He's going to be out for another 30 games. Where does he fall? Redraft, main event, or even auction. Let's do auction. I like auction. Let's do auction.
That can answer both, I think. I mean, I'm thinking about... If I'm playing in the main or even like the online championship, something with an overall component where bench spots are premium, and ceiling is a big deal. I think about it in that context because that's the earliest type of league we're drafting. I think in leagues where replacing players is challenging, it's easier to avoid him if the price stays top 20, top 25 overall. I think there's going to be some leagues where he goes the 1-2 turn in 15 team leagues, like kind of that
1-2 turn. With 35 games out?
I think it's possible.
Okay.
Maybe I'm expecting too much from the market, and that would just sort of say, okay, I'm not bothering with them there. But when do I start thinking about it? Early to mid round three, you're talking like pick 35, the pick 35 range.
Nice. Sweet. I was going 36, so I probably still won't consider them unless I built in a way that it's like, wait a minute, I need speed and he'll bring speed when he comes. But what's to say that he's not going to, you know, hurt a shoulder, hurt a wrist, hurt a this, hurt a that, you know, he plays wildly too, right? So it's not like putting him in center field is going to save him because he's going to go for the ridiculous play. And that's how he got hurt last time, diving for a ball in the hole, I believe. I'm being hard on Tatis here. But I think that's the appropriate... Here's what I'll say. I think 35, 36 is the appropriate spot to consider him. And that's where I think you should consider him. I don't think I will consider him there. And then on the auction side, if I go $26, and this is a 15-team league, GDD style, I go 26.
I might say 27 there because GDD has IL spots. And mm-hmm. even though you wouldn't be able to use one of those spots for Tatis, you'd use those for other players that you draft that get hurt, right? Your other injured guys don't count against your bench. So I'm probably right around that number. I think that's about right.
Yeah, it's about right. 26, 27, I guess. I just, you know, you gotta want the guy. You gotta trust the guy.
I've said this before, and maybe people think it's a cop-out, but I don't think it is. If I'm playing in an auction where I have so much more control over the rest of the players on my roster compared to a snake draft where, mm-hmm. you know, the machinations of everybody else's decisions leave me certain combinations of players to choose from, I'm much more likely to get a player like Tatis or Tatis specifically in the auction setting as opposed to the snake draft setting.
It's why the auction setting is so much better. It just is. I mean, like Rob and I did the main event this year. It's going very well. We're still doing great. Everything's going great. But the auction is so much, such a better way to build a team because you can really decide. And you can, you know, I remember Ariel, who I learned so much from. And I'm going to say it again. If you want to learn, listen to Beat the Shift podcast with my man, Ruvane, who helped my son get better. And he's back playing baseball again. That format of the auction is the premier, by far for me, the premier way to play the game. It's just so much more fun. So much more fun. So it's just delicious. It's just like, because you get to choose. You get to decide. Someone like Freddie Freeman is going in the, you know, 16th, 17th pick. So you're going to take him when you got all these other first basemen that are going to provide value for you. But in the auction, instead of going at that price, which would be like $32, $33, if you can squeeze him for $28, $29, you might be able to get him there. You know what I mean? It just changes the entire dynamic.
Well, and it's that you can take Freeman and you can pay 30 plus for another player that wouldn't be there in a snake draft and put that player with them. Because Freeman was one of the first examples I mentioned on the pod a while back of a player that I liked more in an auction than right. I did in a snake. Yep. And it was the lack of speed and thinking about the construction of the roster and having to get everything. And the other silver lining here, you don't have to roster Tatis next year at all if you don't want to. You don't have to deal with him. You don't have to believe that by passing on him at 23, 25, 27, or you know whatever dollar amount it ends up being or whatever ADP it ends up being, you could say, you know what? I'm not taking the guy that got popped for PEDs and has two significant injuries and has a style of play that makes him more risky. If he comes back and he's amazing, great, tip the cap, that's fine. That's not going to be the one thing that beats you. There's plenty of other ways, like plenty of other things that have to happen for you not to win. So you can just say, F it. I don't want to deal with this situation at all. I don't want to sit back and wait 30 plus games for this guy to come back. And I'd rather spend that money or that draft pick on someone who's going to be there, who could be there every single day all season. That's totally fine too.
Yeah. And that's something we talk a lot about in the off season, like guys that I'll be out on, right? I'm out on this guy. I'm just out on this guy. And then he turns around and becomes CJ Cron for the season, right? Does that make you bad because you're out on a guy who turned out good? No, it doesn't. It means you just got to get other guys that you are high on and that you can, you know, that you could make your living on. Like Paul Goldschmidt was not a guy for me this year. I don't have him on any team.
Oh, but you're still winning some leagues though, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible to not have every single good player on one of your teams and still win those leagues.
That's really important because it's like, oh, I missed. Oh, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter that you missed. Make more than you don't. Yeah. Like hit on the guys. Find like in GDD, Rob and I got Julio Rodriguez for $5. And we got, no, $3 and Torkelson for $5. I don't remember what it was, but it was like, all right, let's just give it a shot. Let's load it up. That's the difference in that league. Without Julio Rodriguez, we wouldn't be where we're at. You know, it's those little finding the discounts, finding the surprise superstars. Whoever picked up Michael Harris, if you picked up Michael Harris, your team is better. If you picked up Spencer Strider, your team is better. And that's why I would really argue Dynasty, though hard to make lists, is really valuable for your redraft. Because you know the players. You have to. It's your job. Your job in Dynasty is not just to know the top 20 prospects in baseball. You need to know the top 200 prospects in baseball. And if you know the top 200 prospects, you know Harris is coming. So that when he tips, and they say, oh, Harris is coming up. Well, I'm going to bid the extra $2 on this guy to make sure that I get him. Then you've got Michael Harris. I did not do that. So I had to go trade for him. Right? I didn't pick up Michael Harris anywhere. He was under my radar, as they say.
So Harris was at 35 on the list when it came out. And I have to imagine that when you saw, I think it was Tuesday, they reported the extension between Harris and Atlanta. It was 8 years and 72 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, for a guy that's got a half season's worth of service time, that's a great guarantee kind of baked in. Atlanta gets a couple of years of free agency back. So I totally understand why they did it. I kind of understand exactly why he did it, given how young he is and the immediate guarantee of that sort of payday. The only question I really have about Harris is how much better will the plate discipline get, and then how soon will that happen, right? You look at his minor league numbers, plenty of walks, not like a 12 to 15% walk rate guy, but usually 8 to 9%. K rate's consistently just under 20%. There's power, there's speed. He's 13 for 13 as a base stealer. This is what's so strange about this. All the time when we look at minor league stolen base rates, we have to go in thinking, okay, look, the batteries in the minor leagues, they're not major league batteries. They don't have pitchers that are as good as holding runners. They don't have catchers that are across the league as good as throwing runners out. So if you see, like, Harris last year was 27 for 31 at high A, that's awesome. 101 games, you're like, okay, that's like a 40-plus steal pace. But as he advances, he's unlikely to run that much because it's not as easy. And as it turns out, I mean, it's not quite a 40 steal pace, but being 13 for 13 in 71 games, that is amazing. I mean, that gives you hope for the future. When you look at the power he brings, the batting average looking really good right now, a possible 25-25 season doesn't seem out of the question in the short term from him. And that's not something I would have put on him 3 months ago.
And he's 21. He's 21.
I didn't think he was going to play in the big leagues this year.
I mean, when he came up, I was like, oh, Michael Harris is coming up. I mean, tip of the hat to the Atlanta Braves, man. This is how you win championships, is doing stuff like this. And they've won five in a row. And he's a big part of it. He's batting at the absolute bottom of the order most games. Sometimes he goes up to eight. I think there were a couple of games where he was leading off a couple of months ago when Acuna was still out. But in 254 at-bats, he's got 46 runs from the back of the lineup. He's got 39 RBIs batting ninth. 13 stolen bases, as you said, 12 home runs. You know, that's what you're looking for. I mean, isn't that what we're looking for? This is exactly what we're looking for. I remember when I put him at 35, I was like, ooh, it's a little scary. You know, this is going to be my last dynasty list for a while. What if he Trent Grisham's on us? I just don't think it. I think he's a really, really good baseball player. Something was in the water for these 21-year-olds when they were born. I don't know what it is. But you're looking at a perennial top 100 player moving forward, I think. And the Atlanta Braves are brilliant. Because now look what they have. They've got Riley locked down. They've got Albies. They've got Acuna. They've got Olsen. They've got young pitching aplenty. I don't know if they keep Swanson. And then the kid, what's his name? Oh, what's the kid who just came up and is...
Vaughn Grissom.
Yeah, Vaughn Grissom. So if Swanson's a free agent after this year, is that correct?
Yeah, he is. They can let him walk.
And just, I mean, maybe they keep him, but maybe they let him walk. Come to the Yankees. We'll take you, Dansby. We need a shortstop. But yeah, the Atlanta Braves are about as good as you can get. And then that little sweet trade for Rosael Iglesias and Jansen has been great. I mean, the team is strong. The team is good. And they got more pitching in the minors. It's just very, very impressive.
Yeah, well run at this time. And Mike Soroka finally making his way back. All the best to him, because the re-tear of the Achilles is such a devastating injury. His career was off to such a good start. I mean, the strikeouts weren't quite there yet, but you got the sense that they were going to be there over time. Even if he wasn't going to be a league leader in strikeout rate, that he was going to eventually be kind of a strikeout per inning pitcher with excellent ratios. So that could be the
excellent
other
ratios.
Big boost that they get to that rotation in the not so distant future. I mean, Strider being as good as he is, Kyle Wright's step forward this year, tons of things have gone right on the heels of winning a World Series. You know, so many teams would find a way to win, lose the face of the franchise, and have a step back. And Atlanta's right there going toe-to-toe with the Mets, who, I mean, look, the team that's going to be the thorn in your side for the next 5 years, if you're Steve Cohen and the Mets, you're looking right at them.
Yeah.
They're the defending champs.
7 years.
It's going to be a while.
Because they can make the short, big investments. They could do a two-year, $60 million contract for a pitcher, for a 34-year-old pitcher, and just pay it because they have the flexibility from the other, from the deals that they've made. I mean, that's, they're building a dynasty team. Like, they're building a dynasty is what they're trying to do and what they seem to be doing. So it's really very, very impressive.
Really is. I think Tyler O'Neill has a buy low window right now, by the way.
Do you?
The swing and miss will always be a bit of a concern, but I think O'Neill is in that group of players that can consistently be among the league's best in barrels. And I think when you do that, that gives you that extra buffer with the swing and miss. And I think it's not just the power. We've seen the speed. He's 8 for 12 this
there.
Year. Yeah. I mean, he's probably a 20 steal guy over a full healthy season if it all clicks.
But what's the average? What's the average going to be on him?
250, 260.
What's his average now?
228.
Sometimes you get caught owning a player and watching the player and hating the player. And it's the only league I got him because he fell so far in this redraft friends and family league of mine. And he's just been either hurt the entire time or striking out, you know, going 0 for 4 an awful lot. And it just hurts my feelings. I'm just not it's sometimes, you know, when it's on your own list and you own the player, you sort of gain a bias towards that player. Last night, and thank you again, DVR, because you keep moving when we're going to do the show around. Last night, I had a chance to go to Yankee Stadium with my family, and we went to see the game. And watching Randy Arozarena hit a 3-run home run in that first inning, he's a guy that I've never particularly liked. But then when you watch him live and you see that ball go and the way that that ball went, it's like, wow, you're really pretty good. That was a bomb.
So. Yeah, I think Arozarena, I think there's some similarities to Tyler O'Neill in that profile. The average might lag a little bit. O'Neill's going to walk more. Well, the 256 is where Arozarena is right now. That's sort of just like what I expect from him. But the power-speed combo is legit. It's more speed from Arozarena. I think O'Neill's power over speed. It's kind of flipped, but just similar in the sense that there's a little bit of a free-swinging approach. The highs are pretty high, the lows are pretty low, but the end result with health tends to be very good. And I just think if you look at the gap between, the long-term value you've got on O'Neill on the list compared to where he was in redraft right now, I think that all totally makes sense in my head. I think we're going to see a similar drop in redraft this winter.
And yeah, where does he go?
Probably in the 125 to 140 range overall, if I had to ballpark it right now.
Yeah, and I probably will pass. I just personally will pass. Again, it's the guys that I like, the guys that I don't like. What about Adolis? Because as we're talking about Arozarena, as we're talking about Tyler O'Neill, Adolis Garcia is having a really remarkable non-OBP season, but he's every time you turn around, he's doing something. I mean, he must be on track for over 100 RBI. He's on track for 25 to 27 home runs. He's on track for 23 to 25 stolen bases with a 254 average. I got him in AL labor. So that's why I've been following him really closely. I forget. I got him for a decent price, like $14, $15 in an only league. That's a pretty good price. And he's been kind of, and I kind of had the anticipation that maybe what he would do is similar to what he did last year, like get really hot and then in July let it all fall off the table. Doesn't seem to be falling off the table.
No, he's playing better than I expected. The approach with the low walk rate and the pretty elevated K rate has worked longer than I expected it to. I think the thing that I underestimated about Garcia that's really important, and it's not like an unknown issue, it's that when you are a great defender, you will play more, even if you have flaws offensively. And Garcia, despite his flaws, does exciting things as an offensive player. Like, that's all of those things are true and were true when I was skeptical of him previously. And I think that's a big part of why I'm remaining pretty open-minded about O'Neill, because I think the Cardinals are going to give him every day playing time. The lost time this year,
especially now with Bader gone, it's not a full house anymore.
Right, a little less crowded. I think he's an important part of their team. It's a max volume playing time player who can do possibly something in every single category. He might not even hurt you in batting average. He might be good in batting average. That's possible. He was a year ago. It's possible.
It's possible.
Barrel rates are absurd. When you hit the ball that hard, even if you swing and miss a lot, you can end up on the right side of batting average. But even if you're just projecting him for like a league average, like again, 250 something batting average, that's fine because the power is comparable. It's on the same sort of, the game power is basically on the same level as Garcia. It's above the level of a Rosarena, and there's speed that's on that same sort of level too, right? Like it's like the Adelis package, but in a situation that's to me a little less risky, just because the walk rate and some of those core skills seem a tick more stable.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you about that. Can we talk? I'm curious for in your mind, the Yordan versus Judge. I have Yordan at 6 and Judge at 7. What do you think? What do you think of that?
I just think it's funny that they're next to each other, because I was starting to think about having Judge on a few teams this year and how that's been amazing. I mean, it's just
ridiculous.
You're getting a player and a half basically in one of your offensive spots because he's been so good. And I'm thinking to myself, who in the pool hits the ball hard enough to have a Judge-like season, to lead the league in homers and win that crown by 15 or 20 in the future? Who is that good of a hitter? And Yordan Alvarez is the only player, the only one who immediately came to mind as very plausible. And I know Judge runs a little, Alvarez almost runs never, so you have to throw the stolen base out.
Judge runs, how many is he? I think he has 10.
He's at 12 already.
Is he at 12?
Yeah.
I mean, 12. Jeez, what are the rest of those numbers? I just pulled up Yordan. I can pull him up on any one of my teams, Aaron Judge, because he's on pretty much all of them.
46 homers, 96 runs, 100 RBIs, and 12 steals, and a 297 average. Yeah.
At 297 average?
Yeah.
And what is his OBP? Hold on, I have it right here.
394.
Dude. I mean, he's just... So where does... Okay, let's do redraft for next year. Okay, because DiPietro's putting together a group tonight. 10:30 at night, a little late for me. It's going to go till like midnight. Where does Judge go?
Oh, someone's taking Judge in the top 5, right?
Has to, right?
But how much of that is recency bias? How sustainable is this level? How different is Aaron Judge today compared to back during our drafts in late March and early April? Is he a different player, or is this just a possible high-end outcome within the range of things that have always been possible from him?
I think that's the answer. I think he struggled a little bit in the last couple of weeks because Stanton's out of the lineup, so they're avoiding him. They're just pitching around him almost like they would, almost to a Barry Bonds level. But this is who he is, and the stolen bases will go away. But I think you're looking at 7 or 8 more years of dominance. Nah, that's too much.
It's more like 3 to 4.
Yeah.
If he's great beyond that, that's awesome. It's hard to expect that far into any player's career.
Truly one of the best athletes. I mean, we were watching him last night. He was playing center field and just gliding to balls. You know, to be that big and that athletic and that flexible and that, it's really special. Alvarez, though, is younger, right? So that's why he's above him, because of the years more that he has. Though I don't think Alvarez will go as long because he doesn't have the same body that Judge has, right? You know what I mean? He's not in bad shape by any stretch. He's better shape than me, but he's not like Judge, which is like a perfect physical specimen that is like made for sports. Alvarez, it looks like he's made for baseball or maybe defensive end.
Yeah. Well, so Alvarez has a 61.2% hard hit rate. Yeah, 61.2% of the time, Yordan Alvarez hits the ball at 95 miles per hour plus. Judges at 60.3%. They're just like they're on their own planet in terms of that hard
contact. Where does Yordan go?
See, Yordan's going to be the perennial doesn't steal bases, boring first rounder. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, I mean, I know Judge has always had that little bit of speed that Yordan's just not going to provide, but I see a pretty easy first round bat with Yordan Alvarez. I think people might still have some concerns about the knees, but hasn't he sort of erased those concerns at this point?
I think he's certainly lessened those concerns, but he's going 11, 12, I'm going to guess, somewhere in there, 10 to 13, that area code. Kind of, he's sort of where Vlad was coming into the season, right? I mean, that sort of like just, you're getting yourself 40 home runs with a great average and tons of RBI, tons of runs and a really good lineup. But Judge could go number one tonight?
Could, but won't.
No, Turner will go one. Turner should go one. Turner deserves to go one. Does Judge go two?
That's probably two.
Yeah, I think it's two.
I could see Julio sneaking in there, though.
With that group, with
a group of NFBC-centric players, you don't think Julio could sneak in there? He'd go two?
Yeah, he could. Oh, yeah. I mean, he can sneak in there. I don't think that's the right play. I don't think that's the right move. I mean, the thing about Judge, when he's stealing bases, he's very clever about it. Because you're not thinking he's going to run, and then all of a sudden he literally steals them, like, out of nowhere. It's like, oh, wait, you just stole another base. Like, oh, my God, are you just grabbing a base here? You're grabbing a base there. It's almost like he's, like, looking out for his fantasy owners. He's like, hey, let me grab you one here. It's first and third. It's two outs. I'm just going to take this base for you. That's when he steals. It's not like Cedric Mullins. He gets on first. Everyone knows, okay, he's going to go. Is he going to go? He's not going to go. Julio, is he going to go? He's not going to go. Judge, it's much more like, oh. And then I mean, how many caught stealings does he have? Let me see. Caught stealings. One.
That's excellent. That's what you want.
That's what you want. He's on pace. Oh my God, I'm looking at the on pace. You want to hear the on pace? Can I read you the on pace?
Sure.
138 runs, 66 home runs, 144 RBI, 17 stolen bases with a 297 average. I mean,
yeah.
That's top three pick in next year's draft. Top two pick. Should be top two pick. He should be a top two pick. I can see Turner one. I can also see Judge one. I like the setup. I still like Yordan ahead of him just by a squidge on a dynasty list because of the four extra years, but I might talk myself out of that all of a sudden and say, well, you know, maybe not.
Yeah, I'm such an idiot. I had a bunch of topics on the rundown for today that I really wanted to get to. We'll save them for a future episode.
You're not an idiot. Take that back. You're one of the great voices and minds of fantasy baseball, period. I'm grateful and lucky to get to work with you, as is everyone else here at the Athletic Fantasy Baseball. Do not use those words about my friend and partner, because you're the man.
Yeah, but I had more like under the radar type stuff. We'll go,
throw them in quick. Let's go.
We'll do the in-season play starting pitching decisions next week, just because it's an evergreen sort of topic. It's a problem that comes up all the time. Let's get the Nando's Funhouse stuff in here.
Yeah, let's finish with that.
Nando would be so excited that JP Sears is up and getting a chance with the A's right now, right? This is like his guy. This is his guy now with a clear runway to be a starting pitcher for a bad team, which is also a Nando thing too, right? Gotta love the A's, taking the over on the wins in 2023. Like, it's, you know, that's where he'd be at right now. You've seen some JP Sears. Do you think he'll be an effective starting pitcher? Effective enough to be consistently mixed league viable, especially when you count for the home park?
I mean, I love the home park. I don't know. I mean, we had the opportunity to start him in a league or two this week, and I wasn't feeling it yet. I just was like, look at what happened to DL Hall as he came up, rookie in a new park, on a new team. But yeah, I mean, he's silky smooth. That's what I'll say. He's got a silky smooth vibe to him. So I kind of like him. But he's not going to win me any leagues this year. That's not where I'm looking. But when he's going to get more starts. But I'm just so afraid. The guy who I really like, and I actually think is going to be cheaper now because of what happened in the sixth last night, is Jose Suarez. Jose Suarez looks to me like Nestor Cortez. Very similar profile, very similar style of pitching. 24 years old. He's available. He's available in a bunch of leagues. And last night was throwing, I think, a perfect game through five. I like Jose Suarez a little bit more than I like JP Sears. That's me. How about you?
probably taking Sears because of the park. Angel Stadium is playing really hitter friendly. I think that's something that's a little bit kind of sneaky in the park factors people might be missing. But man, the Angels are so desperate for pitching. If Suarez could give them number four starter type production, yeah, that's a big win for them internally, just because they need guys like that and they need a lot of them. How about Franmil Reyes getting a fresh start in Chicago?
I think it's great. I actually really think it's great. He went for a lot of money. Dave Miller paid like $28 in GDD for him, something like that. I like it a lot. I also particularly like it because it's 364 to left center field in Chicago. So I think a change of, you know, a change of venue, a shakeup where you're sort of like, wait a minute, I got to work harder, you know, than I've been working. All right, fine, I will. I don't want to go back to the minor leagues. I don't want to get released again. So Franmil Reyes, I think, he's back in the conversation. How about this? He's back in the conversation for a top 200 pick next year. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, what he does in the next 6 weeks.
He's been pretty good. He's been pretty good.
Yeah,
he's been pretty good so far over the course of the last couple of weeks since he's come over. I kind of like it. What do you mean you're buying all the PSA? What is that? What is that?
Oh, this is what Nando would say. I'm buying all the PSA 10s of Franmil Reyes. Buy them all.
Okay, and what else? All the rookie cards. What are the other two quick things that he would say before we head out?
Oh, yeah. The you expletive deleted led me wrong in my Dynasty League again.
We didn't want to say anything. Do you ever listen to the show? We didn't. We kept our mouths shut. You forced us, and then you're going to blame us. I just want to play it out for everybody because he'll be back soon. And then Ryland Bannon went to Atlanta?
Yeah, he got claimed off of waivers, I believe, by Atlanta.
Well, they're pretty smart. They must be listening to Nando DeFino.
Does that... We've probably had this come up at a few different points over the history of the show, but when a good team or a smart team claims a player off of waivers, does that make the wheels start spinning in your head to say, okay, wait a minute, there might be something in their underlying numbers that they see that I should be thinking about?
If I'm Nando DeFino... Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes, I agree with that point. If the Rays do it, if the Dodgers do it, if the Braves do it. But if I'm a Ryland Bannon fan, I want him picked up by the Pittsburgh Pirates, man. I want him picked up by the Oakland A's. I want him fighting Sky Bolt for time.
Right. Better path. Easier path.
Way easier path. I mean, where is he going to play? Where is he going to play? So, I mean, yes, sure. It makes me think that the GM's a listener to the show.
Yeah, I'm gonna say a maybe on that one, but that's just me like trying to make myself feel good about our situation. Maybe it's possible.
Okay, I'm closing us with saying this for the man who is the best voice and the best mind in fantasy baseball and should never downgrade himself on any show again, Derek Van Riper.
It's very kind of you, and at least maybe 50% true.
I'm Ian Khan, and Nando will be back soon. We hope you enjoyed today's show. Keep going, keep trucking, keep rolling. Good talk. Bye.